What happened, anyway? I asked him.
I forgot my door was made of glass and felt like fighting it. I should have gone for the drywall, but I'm a dumbass.
The lightness of his voice and the way he seemed happy was equal parts off-putting and comforting. I felt an attachment to this man, who was clearly running from some dark shit and battling demons that I would never fully understand. But I wanted him to be happy. I wasn't even sure why I cared, but I really, really wanted him to find peace.
Hey, you're coming camping with us, right?
He asked, after a few calm moments of silence passed.
Camping?
I don't think I was invited. I dug my fingernails deeper into my palms. One of the worst feelings was not knowing, but then discovering that you've been left out of something with people whom you thought were friends. I probably wasn't even supposed to know about the trip. Mendoza's face was full of surprise.
Yeah, you were. It's for your birthday. Well, it's for your bro's birthday, but he said you were in. Gloria was looking forward to you coming so there would be more women for her to chill with instead of just a bunch of loudmouth soldiers.
I was so confused, but not entirely against it. I surprised myself. When is it? I asked, sure the hesitation was clear in my voice.
This weekend. You have to come. Plus, it's our send-off to Fisher before he's shipped off.
The words stung me, but in a twisted way. I was relieved that no one had seemed to share my personal feelings about my brother and Kale's betrayal with Mendoza, and he seemed blissfully unaware of the pain it caused me. I didn't want anyone walking on eggshells around me, or feeling sorry for me. I think I have to work, I told him, so he would stop looking at me like he was expecting an immediate yes. But I'll try for sure.
It's gonna be chill, don't worry. And don't worry about Martin, either. He's a fucking idiot and will probably come up with an excuse not to come anyway. I wasn't sure if I should laugh or cry, and the door seemed so far away, so I forced a smile.
Tell Gloria I said hi, will you? I didn't know her well, but had a feeling that if I had the chance to get to know her, I would really like her. A quick daydream of double dates with them and Kale caught me off guard, but I managed to push it away.
She'll love that. She was looking forward to hanging with you before Martin.
As Mendoza opened his mouth to finish whatever he was going to continue with, Kale put his hand on his shoulder.
Let's go,
he said in a cold voice. Mendoza didn't seem surprised or annoyed that Kale was bossing him around, even though Mendoza was older than all of us and had way more responsibility. Honestly, Kale did feel like the responsible one. But it was obvious that he didn't want Mendoza to talk about personal stuff with me. I had been cut out of their inner circle before I even had the chance to join.
I think they just called for you,
Kale said, nodding toward the main desk of the waiting room. Austin promised to text Kale later, and Kale mumbled something about Austin not losing the house key again. I waited like the pathetic, lost puppy I was for the smallest smile or glance, or even acknowledgement from Kale, but it never came. He didn't even so much as look back as he walked away.
Fuck him.
Chapter 10.
How well do you know Mendoza? And what's this about a camping trip that I'm allegedly going on?
I asked Austin as we crossed the parking lot. The rain had stopped falling, but I was sure it would be back. The concrete was black with messy puddles scattered around the uneven pavement. The sky was the color of a river rock. Staring at it soothed me as the roller coaster of seeing Kale was wearing off and now brewing into anger. I opened the driver's side door and sank into the seat. Holding on to the cold metal keys in my hand, I wasn't ready to leave just yet. I needed a second to breathe. As much as I usually preferred to avoid things and pretend they didn't exist, this time I wanted some answers from my brother. He huffed, but didn't say a word, and I wasn't having it. He had lived his whole life getting away with too much. Austin, I sighed. I wasn't leaving this parking lot until he told me.
How well do you know Mendoza?
Pretty well, I guess.
He shrugged.
I don't know him as well as Martin does, but we're pretty tight. I met him before Dad shipped me off to our uncle's.
Austin rolled his window down a little bit to let in the cool air.
Even with the humidity, the post-rain air felt good as it seeped into the car.
What happened to him?
I paused.
To Mendoza?
You mean in general? Or right now today?
He asked.
Both? Either?
I looked around the packed parking lot.
Well, right now I'm not sure. Martin said he punched a window or a door. Or maybe it was the glass window on the door? I can't remember, honestly. But looks like he'll be all right, and overall he's... Well, he's got some fucking wicked PTSD. They went through some shit over there together, and I think Mendoza is having a harder time than the rest of them.
I knew by saying them he was including Kale. I was glad he didn't say his name. It somehow would have made it worse than the chill that blanketed my skin as I thought about the normalcy of all of this. Not one person in the ER seemed fazed by an intoxicated man bleeding through a makeshift tourniquet.
Austin ran his fingers through his sandy hair, which almost touched his ears. Long for him. It would be buzzed off army style soon enough.
Mendoza has been really fucked up lately. He's been like this since I met him, but Martin says he's gotten a lot worse. He's having a really rough time now, and I'm sure having a new baby doesn't help the pressure he's feeling. Everybody's saying his wife is gonna leave him if he doesn't get his shit together, but I don't think she would ever leave him. Their love is just different.
Selfishly, I wondered if I would ever know how it felt to have a love like that.
But it's hard. He's really struggling, and what's he supposed to do about it? If he tells someone, they'll lock him up somewhere, and if he doesn't, he'll continue to do shit like this to cope.
Austin sounded more mature than I've ever, in our entire lives, heard him sound. Maybe he was ready to be a soldier after all? Or maybe he really cared about Mendoza. Perhaps both. How many deployments did he have? He came back with Kale this time, right? I asked. My brother seemed to know way more about this group than I did. Sometimes the details of everyone's deployments confused me. The timelines, the last names, the drama. And Kale wasn't exactly a great interpreter. He didn't like to talk about the army or what he had done or seen. When I thought about it, it felt like I had written and published an entire memoir for him and only him. It would have been nice to at least get a how-to pamphlet as a parting gift from him. Instead, I couldn't even get his eyes to meet mine for longer than a second inside the hospital, despite the fact that he's walking around full of my secrets.
Yeah. Mendoza and Martin got sent home together because of their injuries. Phillips weren't as bad, I guess, but I heard when their Humvee caught on fire.
Injuries? Austin started to cough and rolled the window down more. Are you smoking still? I asked him. Our conversation was bouncing all over the place, but so was my mind. I couldn't keep it in a straight line, even if I tried.
Shh. Doesn't have anything to do with anything. Anyway, I don't really know Phillips that well, but he was Martin's battle buddy. I don't love that Elle is married to him, or how he is with her.
I sighed. Austin was slipping into soldier mode already. I started the car and pulled out onto the road, turning the radio on. And since when was Elodie's married life any of his concern? Battle buddy? You're already using the lingo. And, wait. So is Phillips' last name Phillips, or is his first name Philip? It had never occurred to me that Elodie was calling him Philip this whole time. Austin laughed.
You and I have been using the lingo since we were kids. And his name is Philip Phillips.
He laughed a little.
Like that girl from high school, Christy Christie.
I smiled at the memory of her. She was funny and loud, but in a non-obnoxious way. I wondered what her life was like now. Austin turned the radio down so low that I couldn't hear it anymore. When you said injuries,
Did you mean he got hurt or just PTSD?
I wouldn't say it's just PTSD. You know mental trauma can be much, much worse than physical sometimes.
He pulled out a little cartridge from his pocket and took a drag of it. Vapor filled my car. Hey! I rolled his window down all the way.
I quit smoking cigarettes and weed. You should be proud.
I sighed as he took another hit. I am, but you're still smoking.
Why do you want to know so much about Mendoza anyway? He asked, licking his lips.
I'm just... I tried to think of an answer between the truth and a lie. I just want to know. Especially if these are your friends now.
Care, a lot of shit goes wrong in the military. Yes. And if you look for shit, you'll find it. But overall, life is easier there. There's structure, hot meals every day. I wish you would just think about the good things and not obsess over the bad.
And this was going to be our new dynamic. Me, split right down the middle on how to feel. In order to have Austin be open with me, I needed to accept his decision and hope for the best. But I couldn't help how pissed I was, no matter how hard I tried to bury it. I'm asking because I want to know if he's okay. I'm worried about Mendoza. Kale is always with him, helping him through some kind of episode or talking him off a ledge. If his wife leaves him... I pause to try to swallow the lump in my throat. That will be awful.
Yeah. He will go off the deep end for sure if Gloria leaves him, but I'm telling you, she won't. They have 3 kids and have been together since high school. Plus, no one can handle him like she can. Except Martin.
I felt Austin's eyes on me, but I kept mine on the upcoming gate to exit the post.
It can be fucking hard, this life. We grew up in it, so we know more than most.
He continued.
But I'm only obligated to 3 years, and I'll get college money and have a place to live. I can get a car. So stop worrying about me. Look, I'm sorry about the way I did it, and if I could do it over, I would tell you the right way, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm still going.
I just wish you would have talked to me before.
At least warned me so I knew what was coming and wasn't the last one to find out.
I rubbed my temples.
Yeah, but honestly, you probably wouldn't have given me the chance to explain.
He trailed off, taking another hit of the vape pen. I didn't know how to argue with him and really didn't want to right now. I was sad, pissed, still thinking about Mendoza and how Kale was wrapped into his life. And now that he was in my brother's, I'd never get him out of mine.
I get the way you feel about the army, Karina. I felt it too, you know that. But I don't have the money to go to school, or any skills.
We both had trade scholarships, I reminded him.
I used mine.
He rolled his eyes and leaned back against the seat.
Yeah, I know. You're also smarter than me. I'm not book smart, and I'm the fuck up. I'm the one who got arrested once, and
almost twice. You nearly got Kale arrested and assaulted.
That wasn't my fault.
It wasn't your fault the way they profiled him, no. But it was your fault that we were there in the first place. To save your ass. Austin threw his hands up.
I'm sorry, okay? I wasn't gonna let a girl get threatened and harassed by her boyfriend, and I didn't know what else to do, and some shitbags being racist isn't something I can control, unfortunately.
I barely remembered the blurred faces of the young MPs that night, but as clear as day I remembered how they had drawn their black sticks into the air before a single question was asked. Kale's voice echoed in my head.
That's what happens when you train young men to kill and not to restrain.
Kale had tried to help get Austin out of the chaos, but was immediately targeted. It still made my blood boil that there was nothing we could do about it.
I've said I was sorry for that, and Martin knows I felt like shit about it. Look, Care, I'm trying to do my best, okay? And yeah, I keep fucking up sometimes, but I'm doing a lot better than I was while living with our uncle.
I sped up to get in the fast lane and tried to consider what my brother was saying, and to see things from his point of view.
You have to learn to let things go, Care. For real. I know you're pissed because I didn't tell you and you found out in a shitty way, but we aren't kids anymore. And I can't keep promises that I made before I even knew what life would be like on my own. And not to be a dick, but this isn't your life.
I took a breath before responding. He was right, in a way, for sure. But that didn't help my anger and disappointment, and even worse, my fear. The deep fear that my brother might lose his life fighting someone else's war.
I get that. But this isn't just getting a job at Kroger or something.
And the fact that Kale helped you and didn't tell me. I thought I could trust him.
This is a big deal. I paused.
To me, anyway.
You don't trust anyone. And that's what you're really mad about. That he was involved, not that I'm enlisted.
My brother raised his brow, still smoking the USB port-looking jewel. He kept speaking while I contemplated his accusation. I couldn't say he was fully wrong.
Martin, he's a good guy. I've told you before, and I'll tell you again and again. He takes care of us, all of us. Look how he is with Mendoza. He's like that with everyone. He's the only reason I even got in with a good recruiter, one of his connections. Don't give him such a hard time. I know you're looking for a reason to hate him, but you won't find it through me.
I don't think I need a reason, I argued. Austin sighed, shaking his head. And there, the sting of betrayal was back. I gave Kale access to me by sharing my insides and my secrets, and he knew damn well how I would react if my brother signed his freedom away. Even so, Kale helped him anyway. I guess he cared more about Austin than me, and digesting that burned like hell. Well, I'm glad you've made such a good friend, I said sarcastically. Part of me warmed over the way my brother felt about Kale. As he talked about him, I heard the security in his voice that I knew Austin needed. My brother was the kind of person who was at their best when around other people. We were different in that way. It was another thing he got from our mom.
Care? It's not like you were going to actually date him anyway. He's getting out and moving, and you always said you'd never date a soldier. I was shocked y'all were even hooking up.
I was glad we were almost home, because my brother was pissing me off the more he spoke, and I was trying really damn hard not to slap the shit out of him.
First of all, we weren't just hooking up, and this isn't only about that. I'm worried for you. I don't give a fuck about him, I snarled at Austin and reminded myself.
My cheeks were on fire. He rolled his eyes and looked straight through my lie, but I continued. Everything isn't black and white. You both lied to me, and now you're going away when you just got here.
I'm gonna be alone with Dad and Estelle, and sometimes Elodie until her husband comes home, and you're not just going off to college or a job somewhere, you're going to the fucking army. And once you're in, you can't just quit or run away. The chances of you getting out once you're in are abysmal. You know that.
That's not true. People serve one term and get out all the time. Besides, have you ever thought, even for one second, that this might be good for me?
Austin's lips pursed, and he raised his voice louder.
You can feel however you want about the army, and I know Mom leaving messed you up, and me too. But some people are happy in the military. It even saves some people's lives, he said with a shrug. Mom and Dad made zero sense together as a couple. Army or not, deployments or not, I don't think they would have stayed married either way. Everything isn't the Army's fault. They should have never been together in the first place, if we're being really honest.
I blinked, and blinked again, thankful we had stopped at a red light.
But maybe it wouldn't have been the same, I said,
though I was acutely aware that my argument was losing steam. He wouldn't have been gone so much, and she wouldn't have been so lonely.
That's what it was that did her in, the loneliness.
Yeah, we can pretend that she and Dad didn't hate each other, that she was just lonely, Austin scoffed, tugging at the hem of his t-shirt.
Loneliness is hard, Austin. It can eat you alive, feeling like you're always alone. No friends, no family, and no one to depend on. I took a deep breath. That had been the way I'd felt my entire life. Austin would never understand the toll it's taken on me. He had no idea how it felt to feel loneliness to the bone. Next to us, a woman pulled up in an SUV full of children. She smiled at the preteen in the passenger seat, who was gleefully handing out donuts from a green and white box. Judging from the ages of the kids in the car and the fact that we were right outside Fort Benning, this was definitely an army family. But the mom looked happy, car full of kids and all.
"Yeah, well, see, sometimes army life works for some families," Austin countered, pointing to the SUV.
Maybe Austin had a point. I was nearly sure of it, but that didn't mean I wanted to hear it right then. How could twins be so different? The light changed, and I turned down the alleyway next to my house. We were both getting a little heated, but man, it felt good to be talking about things honestly and not ignoring them for once. We both must have been thinking about that as we drove down the street in silence.
"I'm lonely now," Austin said, as if admitting it haunted him. "I'm literally homeless. I don't have a car. And I'm walking away from everything and everyone that's familiar, and the little bit of stability I have here. It's all about to change."
He laughed, changing the tone to make light of it. But it was the truth. I regretted thinking he didn't know what loneliness was. Without me saying anything, he continued.
"No offense, Care, but I'm not like you. I don't want to be alone. I'll have friends in the army. Hell, maybe I'll get stationed here and you'll see me all the time anyway."
I thought about that. Since he was joining the infantry, that likely meant either going to Fort Hood or staying here. At least, I'd heard that was where most infantry soldiers were being sent. I didn't know enough about the details of his MOS, so I was confused about all of it. But Austin's charm was working on me. I listened to the excitement in his voice and thought about him being close and having some structure and stability in his life.
"Hell, maybe I'll go to Hawaii and you can come visit me on the beach and drink rum from coconuts."
He smiled. The boyish smile from our childhood was all I could see. He changed so much since those memories. But no matter how much he looked like a man now, he would always be a mischievous teenage boy to me. "I wish. But what if they ship you straight to deployment?"
"And what if you get hit by that truck backing out of that spot?" I slammed on my brakes as Bradley, the mattress shop owner, reversed in his huge silver truck less than 10 feet away. "What ifs aren't real, Care. You're gonna what if yourself to death."
I'd always been that way. I didn't know how to turn it off. But I did know how to pretend that everything was fine when I wanted it to be, and Hawaii did sound pretty damn good. "Fine. I'll stop being pissed at you if you get stationed in Hawaii or here. If you're sent to Texas, all bets are off."
"Texas would be good too. It's not that far, and the food is good as hell."
"No way. I'm not going back to Texas." Slamming doors, screaming voices. My mom crying from the front porch and the creaking of the metal springs, holding the swing up, rang through my mind when I thought about the state with the biggest sky I'd ever seen.
"You loved Texas. Remember how much fun we had there?"
he asked with a falsely innocent face.
"Yeah, some fun.
I remember tagging along to all the miserable parties. All the gross boys who were too old to be hitting on me. All the girls who stopped being nice to me after you ghosted them. Our mother nearly burning the house down, and our father punching holes in the walls and patching them up every other month." I filtered my thoughts instead of saying them. We were now parked in my driveway, and I had to get to work. I unbuckled my seatbelt. "Correction, you had fun there? I'm never going back." He smiled.
"Even Austin?" It's my city, remember?
Ah, another one of Mom's tales. Don't try to distract me. Our mother loved to tell us stories about the most random things. She should have been a writer with the way her imagination worked, sometimes so well that she floated between fiction and reality. This particular story was that Austin, the capital of Texas, was named after my brother when he was born. Her legend had it that the state had been in a drought for months until the moment he was born, making some mayor or senator name the city after him, even though we were twins and born only seconds apart. Austin could have his city, though, because I had my own special island named after me. The beaches had white sand, and there was a castle named after my mom. She told me these legends and secrets about our island way past the age that I actually believed it. It was off the coast of Florida, she said. It was stunning, and the sun on your skin was as warm as the people. In a soft, wishful voice, she would speak of a secret beach on our island where you could see the brightest stars hanging in the darkest sky. They lit up the night like nothing anyone had ever seen before, and she promised to take me there one day. Once we go, we can't come back, she would say, her fingers playing with the ends of my hair.
Can Austin come with us?
I asked her once. I distinctly remember the way her face changed, the way she would always look back at the house from the porch swing. I don't think he can, she answered, and I followed her eyes to the living room window where my brother and father were watching a football game, talking and smiling, shoving chips and dip down their throats. She made me pinky swear not to tell anyone, even my brother, about our island. When I agreed, she made up more tales about a queen who shared not only her name, but who also had elaborate escape plans to leave her home island. It all sounded so stupid now. But as I thought about the trapped queen, I realized most of my mother's stories had meanings too deep for me to understand at the time. In tales told about Austin, he was always, always, always the savior. But mine seemed like an afterthought, as if Mom felt sorry and didn't want to leave me out. My tales were only woven from her fears, regrets, and worries. Toward the end of her life with us, she stumbled up to my room more and more often. I would be tired as hell from school and my after-school job, but I would stay up just to have time with her, even with the smell of vodka on her breath and the shaking of her fingers as they brushed through my hair. Instead of making up the stories, she began to ask me to tell her about our island, how I was taking care of it, to be the storyteller instead. How are the people? Do we dance on the warm sand as the sun set across the ocean? That's how she best coped with things. When I grew up and became fascinated by psychology and why people were the way they were, I read books and searched the internet for facts, for reasons behind the human behaviors that I saw every day. The more I learned and the more therapists I talked to, the more I realized that my mom needed to pretend everything was good to survive. She would always refer to a time when things were better, back when I was a little girl. She wanted to live in the past because it was the golden time of her life, despite it being the darkest of mine. She had lived through a worse childhood than I had. Unthinkable things had happened to her at the hands of men in her family who'd claimed to love her, and no one had protected her. When I was too tired and nodding off to sleep, she would beg me, alcohol thick on her breath, to take her away from here. I would start reciting the story she had once told me, but she would always take over a few lines in. She would cry too sometimes. Silently, but I would feel her hot tears drip on my arm and her body shake in the darkness. When she was really disassociated from reality, I would talk in third person, telling her that I was glad she had visited again, that it had been too long. It made her smile when I said the island's water was warm and the people were thriving. I would pick up the stories where she left off and rub her hair right at her scalp line like she once did for me, until she spoke again. The sadder she was, the darker the stories became.
It was hard to sleep afterwards, on the nights when her stories felt haunted, and she would usually stay in my room. Since it would invariably be the most attention I'd gotten from her in a while, I sort of longed for those dark tales. A pang stung at the bottom of my stomach whenever I thought about my mom. The good memories felt so much clearer than the bad. For years, I'd been trying to hold on to them and pluck the bad ones out of my memory one by one. It was like having two of her, like she had a twin. The bad times were becoming easier to drown out and emotionally detach from. The good times, the ones when we would laugh until our stomachs hurt while we ate peanut butter straight from the jar using sticks of celery, pulled me into missing her, which only made me feel more alone. That feeling of abandonment would follow me everywhere I went. Hawaii, Texas, Mars. The fact that I wasn't good enough for even my own mother to stay would always haunt me. I looked over at Austin in the passenger seat. He was staring out the windshield, and I wondered which version of our mom he was thinking about. "Where do you think she is right now?" I asked. I wasn't really asking my brother or myself. It was more of a call to the universe.
"I don't know."
Austin didn't look at me.
"But she isn't here, and she sure as hell doesn't want to be found."
Chapter 11.
"Is it okay if I stay here for a few hours?"
Austin asked as he sat down on my couch, scratching his scalp.
"I can go to Martin's later when things settle with Mendoza. I just need a shower and to sleep a bit."
"Yeah, I'm going to work anyway," I told him. "Just lock the door when you leave and don't sleep in my bed." I laughed lightly, but I was serious. I hadn't washed my sheets since Kale had slept in them, and I didn't want anyone in my bed for the small chance that the hint of his scent that was left would disappear.
"Thanks. I'll crash on the couch or in the chair."
Kale's sleeping body spread across the chair flashed through my mind, and I tried to ignore it, telling Austin to sleep there since Elodie would probably be home soon and she would only be comfortable lying on the couch. I needed to get to work. Today had been one of the most chaotic days of my life, and I was ready for it to be over. What I really wanted to do was go into my bathroom, turn the shower on as hot as I could tolerate, and let my mind wander as the water soaked my body and hid my tears. Austin's phone rang in his pocket. He showed me the screen as he ignored the call. I rolled my eyes at seeing Kale's last name.
"He's a good guy, and he's helping me a lot,"
Austin said defensively. I snorted.
"Yeah, good guy. If he's so great, then why did he ignore me just now at the hospital? He didn't try to apologize to me, or even talk to me. He acted like I wasn't there." "As opposed to you doing what, being so warm and friendly to him?"
Austin's comeback annoyed me. He's in the wrong here. I didn't hide anything from him.
"Everyone hides shit. He did it for your own good, like I did."
I looked at him, a little stunned by the certainty of his words and the relaxed look on his face. "It's not up to either of you whether it's for my own good or not. And not everyone lies, Austin," I said, rubbing the goosebumps prickling my arms. He nodded.
"Yeah, they do."
I didn't know what to say. There was definitely something different about the way my brother had been carrying himself in the short time since he'd been hanging out with Kale. He was more grown up than before. He still had his goofy, boyish demeanor, but I had to admit Kale's influence seemed good for him. Today, when Austin arrived at my house, his shoulders were slouched, his brows turned down, suggesting he was actually feeling bad for the way his recent choices had made me feel. He knew things between us weren't going to be normal for a while, but he also knew I would always have his back. "I really, really have to go. I'm so late. Don't forget to lock my door." I ran my hands over my uniform pocket to make sure I had my phone and my keys.
"Why are you so worried about locking your door? You live in a quiet neighborhood."
My brother stepped in front of me as I made my way to the door.
"Something happened that I don't know about?"
No, I'm just being cautious. And Elodie is pregnant, so we have to be extra safe.
I stepped around him and onto the porch. I didn't have the time or energy to explain to him that I was generally paranoid and didn't exactly know why.
Austin looked me dead in the eyes.
Feels like you're lying.
I sighed, moving to the bottom landing of the steps. Nothing happened.
But some creep did come into my work a few weeks ago asking about Dad, and then that nurse today seemed to know you were his son. Shouldn't I be the one asking you what the hell is going on? I just feel like everyone around me knows something that I don't, and it's making me feel...
I paused. I didn't think Austin would really understand the way my brain worked.
Wait, what guy? Does Martin know?
Austin's voice was loud against the stillness of the quiet street. The sun was bright orange in the sky, breaking the rain. It was this guy named Neil, or Nate? Nielsen, I think? Honestly, I don't know for sure. He looked sort of familiar, but I couldn't place him for the life of me. What's more, I'm a woman, living alone with another woman who is pregnant. Haven't you seen the news lately? We need to keep our door locked.
Nielsen? Are you sure? What the fuck? What the hell was he doing at your work? Does Martin know about this?
Austin raised his voice and began pacing on the patch of grass next to the steps. It was starting to feel like Kale was consuming my entire existence while simultaneously being absent. I refused to make this about Kale.
He's the guy I was fighting that night with Kale and the MPs, Austin continued.
It was that guy? I tried to remember his face, but everything was a blur. Do you know him?
Yeah. No, not well, but he definitely knows me.
Growing concerned, I asked, is he actually dangerous, or is he just some dick who likes to start fights? What does he want with you?
What did he want with me?
He's Katie's ex. She broke up with Nielsen, and he blames me.
It took me a minute to register who Austin was talking about. The girl from the party 3 weeks ago, who'd heard me say that she was basically Austin's girl of the week. I had felt so bad for her. Now my guilt disappeared immediately.
Austin shook his head.
He also knows stuff about Dad. I don't know if it's all true, and I've been trying to stay the fuck out of it, and you should too, but he's been spreading all kinds of shit around about Dad to anyone who will listen. I want you to stay the hell away from him.
Like what? What is he spreading? I knew I should be at work, not asking him about conspiracies about our dad, but this all felt too weird, too much like I was missing a piece of a puzzle. The way my brain works and Austin's half-explanation didn't sit well with me. A hazy memory floated in my mind. The edges were blurry, and I couldn't put it together, but I felt like I was missing something or forgetting something. I couldn't recall much of the night with the MPs, but there was an overly prickly feeling that coated my body when he showed up at my work. Had I seen him before? I couldn't exactly place him. He hesitated.
Well, he was saying some crazy shit about Dad concealing a scandal involving civilian deaths or something. That his retirement is just a cover-up for what happened. It's spreading pretty fast around Post.
Did my brother know more than what he was telling me about our dad's secrets? I wasn't going to be the one to open that can of worms when I was already late as hell for work, and I was confused about the amount of truth there was to all of it. Investigating whether or not my dad was the villain responsible for innocent lives lost would have to wait until after work, or whenever I could force my brain to process just how heavy all of this was. What the hell does one of your little girlfriends have to do with Dad? This seems much bigger than that.
I don't know what his hatred for Dad stems from, or why the fuck he showed up at your work, or how he even found out where you work. Why didn't you tell me?
You're not exactly reliable, Austin, I snapped. And I didn't know you knew him. As his twin, I could feel that the truth in my words hurt him. Suddenly, he looked so tired and so distraught, giving away that there had to be more to the story than what he was telling me. How does Nielsen know Dad in the first place? I asked.
He was deployed with all of them on the last one to Afghanistan.
in Dad's platoon, and he just got back. I heard Nielsen went AWOL. Just disappeared one day, and months later, they found him in a village living amongst the people. And when they tried to take him back, he said he didn't want to come. I heard he'd lost it completely and had even fallen in love with a local woman. After they found him, they locked him up for a few days, and then suddenly he was out, roaming the streets, which never happens, especially when someone goes AWOL and starts living with the so-called enemy. With smaller things, like drugs, sometimes you get shipped to rehab. Sometimes you get kicked out with a dishonorable discharge slapped on you. But what Nielsen did was so much worse. Something just doesn't add up.
Austin paused and looked at me.
I also heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but the village he was in, along with the woman he was in love with, was completely destroyed.
My brother's voice melted into sympathy.
I think he blames Dad for all of this. And now he's back at Benning, but his mind seems to be gone. I've heard all kinds of off-the-wall things about Nielsen since he got back. He started seeing Katie, and when she broke up with him and went out with me, it sent Nielsen over the edge.
My mouth was dry, and my body felt like I had been carrying a backpack of stones. How did my life go from the most boring existence possible to this web of drama and secrets that I couldn't keep up with? I glanced across the street, hoping my job would still be there when I finally arrived. I should have just called off work and dealt with the consequences later. I couldn't imagine being able to focus on my clients right now with all of this going on.
So a man who has it out for you and Dad after being locked up for going AWOL is roaming around and showing up at my work?
Does Dad know about any of this? Austin rubbed his eyes.
It's a lot to explain.
Well, I want the explanation.
Don't you have to go?
Austin tilted his head back and raised his hands in the air again before I could begin to go off on him. As usual, he opened the show, but wasn't able to close the curtain at the end.
We can talk about everything later, he said. Go to work. I need to sleep or I'm gonna pass out standing here. I'll lock the door so your paranoid ass isn't worried about it your whole shift.
I nodded, even though I was far from finished with this conversation. As I crossed the street, I texted Elodie and told her I was heading to work in case she needed anything. During the brief walk to the shop, I thought about Kale again. Was he aware of any of this? In a fucked up way, the idea of having him here to help, or hell, even to stop what was going on, made me feel more safe. But the reality, apart from my brother, was that he was already dissociating himself from my life. He barely seemed to notice me today, and he was cold as ice. Maybe he didn't want to cause a scene? Or maybe he didn't know what to say, or was too consumed by Mendoza's shit. Or maybe he just didn't care after all. It's not like he was the first or second or even third person who'd tossed me to the side. The more frustrating part was not knowing when I would get used to it.
Chapter 12. Work had flown by, even though I'd stayed an extra 2 hours to make up for how late I was that afternoon. Molly had barely said a word to me, and the evening had been slow, with no walk-ins and only one of my regular clients, Lisa, who spent the whole time talking about the laser hair removal she was getting next week. I listened to every word like it was the Bible so I could keep my mind distracted. It was ironic and funny in a fucked up kind of way, just how different people's problems could be. I would kill to trade places with Lisa for one day. I'd love to worry about how my skin would handle thousands of dollars of laser hair removal, instead of worrying about how I was going to pay my electricity or fill my gas tank this week. When I got back to my place after work, my neighbor Bradley was tying a bundle of wooden boards together in the bed of his truck. Ever friendly, he warned me it was going to rain again that night, and the next morning. I thanked him and kept walking as Kale slipped back into my mind. The sound of his tires peeling out on the road as he drove away from me as I knelt on the wet grass, almost like I was praying for something, anything to take the pain away. It felt crushing then, and still did. Austin, Kale, Mendoza.
Now this Nielsen guy. All of it gave me a headache. I missed the simplicity of my life before I met Kale. I hated that I missed him. When I got home, the house was eerily quiet. Austin had neatly folded up the blanket he'd slept with and left a half-rinsed-out bowl of cereal in the sink, colorful Fruit Loops floating on top of the murky milk-water mixture. I checked my phone to see if he'd said anything about where he was going, even though I knew he was going to Kale's. I wiped down the kitchen counter and sink, finally finishing the dishes I'd started washing that morning. The silence of my little house was deafening. I tried to hum a song, but the melody kept getting lost in my throat. Kale's deep, smooth-as-butter voice rang through my head on an endless loop. So I turned on music, then took a shower. Even my shower was tainted by memories of him. Why the hell did I let him get so close to me so fast? I tried to figure out the answer to that question while I towel-dried my body. The lotion on my palms reminded me of when he said my skin smelled like honey and licked his tongue down my bare shoulder. I distracted myself from the memory by finishing the laundry. My hair was almost dry by the time I was done folding my clothes and putting the sheets back on my bed. And I was still thinking about Kale. How good he looked earlier. Not that it freaking mattered, but he looked better than ever. Though he hadn't been smiling, there seemed to be less weight on his broad shoulders. Maybe that weight from before had been caused by me. Reality TV was a great distraction. I lay on the couch and turned on HGTV to watch Chip and Joanna Gaines turn a tiny dump of a house into a beautiful home. I rolled my eyes with envy when the big reveal came, and the husband picked his wife up off her feet and twirled her in the air in their brand new kitchen. Fuck them, and their perfect life, and even better kitchen. Elodie came through the door right as I skipped ahead to a new episode.
I love this show! Oh, it just started, she said, pointing at the screen.
Elodie sat down on the couch and kicked her shoes off. The color was back in her cheeks, and she had a bag with leftover takeout, so I assumed she'd eaten. I was relieved she was finally home. How are you feeling? I asked her while a commercial for a sweepstakes played. One day, I would pay for streaming without ads.
Better. A lot better. I'm sorry for earlier. I'm sure Molly was pissed at you for being late. She winced.
It's fine. Don't worry about Molly. We were slow anyway.
I'm so glad you and the baby are okay.
I leaned against her knees and she raised her small hand to pet my head, twirling strands of my hair between her fingers. Involuntarily, my eyes began to sting. Tiny, intimate gestures were not something I received often.
Me too.
Elodie's voice had a hint of sadness in it. I looked up at her, and she bit her lip, hesitating.
I talked to Philip.
What did he say?
He said he wishes I trusted him and that none of it's true.
But you do trust him. Just because I didn't mean his wife felt the same.
I did. I do. I trust him, but the way he handled it all bothers me. He said the person spreading this rumor is crazy, and that I should ignore it all because it's nothing. The thing is, he wasn't surprised by any of it, and I just have this feeling...
She gently brushed the stray hair off my forehead as she spoke. What kind of feeling? I asked, knowing Elodie probably couldn't articulate it. I wasn't sure what she was thinking, but if it were me, his response wouldn't have been enough. A stranger found her parents on Facebook, across the globe, and wrote them detailed messages accusing Philip of having an affair. That didn't seem like something she should just sweep under the marriage rug. Watching my parents definitely taught me that in marriage, you have to pick and choose your battles. Toothpaste in the sink is a very different battle than an accusation of cheating.
I can feel it here inside. The feeling that something is wrong.
Did you tell him that? I asked.
Before giving her my opinion, I wanted to gauge where she was.
I didn't. I lied and said I believed him. I can't ignore it now that my parents know. And the baby was in distress today because of it. It's not that simple to just ignore.
She looked at me. I wouldn't be able to either. I don't think anyone would, I assured her. Her blue eyes focused on mine.
Would you believe him?
Me? I tried to buy a few seconds. I don't know him well enough to know, honestly. But someone contacting your family is a pretty big deal, and pretty ballsy to do if it wasn't true. Plus, I believe in trusting your gut, always.
If it's true, what am I supposed to do? What if he is cheating on me? You told me that most military couples cheat.
Her eyes started to water.
Man, did I regret saying that. Really, Karina, what can I do? Go home to France? Ask my parents to buy me a plane ticket? I don't have any money. Everything is in his name. And he says there is a law to stop me taking the baby away from him.
I sat up and moved next to Elodie on the couch. He said that today? She nodded.
He was very upset. He was threatening me.
I reached for her hand. I could feel her misery. It felt so familiar. Even though our circumstances were so different, misery was misery. Don't think about anything but what's best for you and the baby, okay? He can't stop you from going home if that's what you want.
What an awful situation to be in.
She could run home, but realistically, would she? Would it even be for the best? I didn't know. The more I learned about Philip, the more I realized I didn't actually know him at all. Cale was his only backer, which meant there had to be something good in him, right? Or maybe they were two peas in one manipulative pod, and that's why they were so close.
I don't know what I want. He's become so angry. It is hard that he is not here, and hard that he is at war. And before the fight today, there have been more problems. I don't look forward to him calling me now, she said. I know that sounds awful, but all we do is fight, and I'm tired.
It doesn't sound awful at all. It's understandable to feel like that. So, his advice as your husband was to ignore the whole thing. He didn't try to comfort you? Another nod. Is that what you want in your life? To be ignored when something is wrong? I asked. She shook her head.
I don't think I can live that way. And this feeling in my stomach.
Her hand rubbed over her belly. Besides the baby, she smiled a little.
It's so strong that it's making me sick.
I know he told you to ignore it, but like I said before, we can investigate on our own. Can you have your parents send you a screenshot of the message and we can figure it out? Elodie leaned forward to grab her phone from the table in front of the couch. She pulled up a pic and handed it to me.
They sent me a screenshot.
My eyes adjusted to the familiar face.
I stopped myself from saying Nielsen, the man Austin and I had talked about earlier today.
I zoomed in on his face, his beady little eyes, his tight jaw.
It was the same guy from the shop asking for my dad, the same guy whose girlfriend my brother was sleeping with.
And here he was, claiming his wife was sleeping with Elodie's husband. What in the hell was going on?
Do you know him? Elodie asked, looking at her screen again.
I grabbed my phone from my pocket and typed his name into the search bar on my Facebook.
He looks like someone... I don't know.
Do we know him? She asked, tilting her head a little. I wasn't sure just how detailed I wanted to get with Elodie about the whole thing until I knew more, especially given her trip to the hospital today because of stress. But on the other hand, I knew very well how half-truths felt, and I hated that feeling. He's the guy who Austin was fighting in the street that night when the MPs were there.
She nodded, but I could tell she needed further elaboration.
This is confusing, said Elodie.
Her fingers rubbed her temples, and she sighed. I agreed. Very. Let's get some more information first. I don't want you to worry about it. You have enough going on. How did you leave things with your parents? I asked, changing the subject. She shrugged. She was still in her uniform from this morning. It was loose on her arms, but tight on her belly.
They want me to come home. Karina, am I a bad person if I don't want to go back?
She took in a breath and slowly kicked her dangling feet back against the edge of the couch.
I love Philip. I do. And I've tried to be the best wife, and it has been hard. Even if we don't end up together, I want to stay here.
Lately, I've been thinking about it a lot.
I know I don't have family in the United States, but I do like it here.
The bigger houses, the people. The place I'm from is so small, and my parents aren't city people. They live outside of Paris, but don't visit the city, and anyway, I could never afford to live there. And I'm starting to make friends here. My friends back home have gone to university or have moved somewhere else.
I gently rubbed her shoulder. First of all, no. It doesn't make you a bad person. And I get it. As much as I hated moving when I was young, some people thrive in new environments. My mom was like that. She always wanted to start over, to try new things. It's nothing to feel bad about.
You're so young, Elodie. You can always move back if you want to. You have that freedom. I thought about my mom dancing around the living room, raising her arms up high. She always dressed like she was straight out of Woodstock, her hair in a braid that she would let me decorate with colorful beads. I didn't know what it was about that particular memory that caused me to recall it so fondly. The music was loud, the windows were wide open for the whole neighborhood to hear Santana's electric guitar gliding through the air. My mom loved Santana before it was cool to love him. I remembered how the house smelled like pot roast when I got home from school that day. My mom grabbed my arms the moment I walked through the door, taking my book bag from my shoulders and telling me to ignore my schoolwork for the night as she tossed the bag on the couch. She even wrote me an excuse the next day for my homework, something my dad would never agree with and never find out about. The sleeves of Mom's fringed suede jacket, brown and too big for her body, looked like wings as she flew around the room. She was like a bird trying to make the best of its metal cage. Elodie leaned closer to me and snapped her fingers in front of my face.
Enough about me. I'm worried about you.
Me? Why? I shook my head, acting like I wasn't just spacing out of our conversation.
You're so distracted lately. And sad. I can see it. You're just, how do you say, zoned out.
She looked pointedly at my face.
I scoffed. I'm not sad or zoned out. I was just...
It was a terrible lie I didn't even bother to finish. And she rolled her eyes.
Please, you are. And I know you don't like to talk about it, but I know you are very unhappy, very sad, and very lonely. And you saw Martin today. That must have been hard.
Okay, okay. I put my hands up. I get it, Jesus. Can't we go back to your life drama and not mine? I smiled, trying to lighten things up. We both laughed.
It must have been hard.
Are you guys speaking at all? Elodie pursed her lips. I loved the way the slight language barrier sometimes took the sugarcoating out of her words, especially when I really needed to hear something. Anyway, back to your problems, I teased. I'll find out more about this asshole, and you just focus on taking care of yourself and the baby. Please? She nodded and smiled, then sighed.
Thank you. No matter what, I cannot leave you.
I would miss you so much, and you don't have any friends. She kissed me on both cheeks.
I have friends. Plus, who decided that having friends was better than spending time with myself, reflecting on my own thoughts? Weren't we just saying that women should be their own best friend? I did my best Samantha Jones voice. Elodie usually chose Charlotte as her favorite Sex and the City character to impersonate, but for me it was Samantha, the one I was the least like in real life.
I don't agree. Life is about experiences with other people.
She hummed, wiggling around on the couch before getting comfortable under her favorite blanket, the one her grandmère made her.
I have experiences, I pouted.
Alone?
And?
I like to be alone. I like myself. I shrugged, lying a little, but someday that would be the truth.
Yes, but Martin still likes you.
I can tell by the way he was sulking around like a lost puppy when I saw him the other day.
Shh.
I pressed my finger over my lips.
And?
She said, a mischievous smile growing as she spoke.
If my husband isn't cheating on me and you two can figure your problems out, we will have double dates with the two of you and be couple friends and do couple stuff together.
She moved her eyebrows. I covered my face with a pillow from the couch. Don't count on it.
You guys will work it out, Elodie said with certainty.
I groaned and pointed to the TV.
Look how beautiful.
I attempted to distract her with a huge white marble island being installed in a brand new, stark white kitchen.
Let's watch other people live perfectly and enjoy it and stop talking about my non-existent dating life.
Fine, but only because I'm tired.
Elodie yawned and leaned against me.
Chapter 13. Kale. My place was freezing. I stepped into a familiar pitch-black darkness. The cold, dark nights in the desert sleeping on the ground were gone for now, but the reminders never stayed away long. I almost felt comforted by the chill. Half of my life felt too good to be true. My freedom was right around the corner, supposedly. I knew the system better than that. To expect everything to go smoothly to the point that I could drive away from Fort Benning without consequences. Shit never went down like that. But I was closer to freedom than I'd been in a while. Even if it wasn't guaranteed to be real. The other half, though, the harshness that I had always been aware of, but lately had been consuming me, that I wasn't a good person. I had done a lot of bad shit, but knowing that Karina knew it, that she was right all along not to trust me. I had my reasons, but she would see me as a bad person for the rest of her life. Until she forgot me, at least.
It's fucking cold in here,
Fisher bitched, his voice sending a shock through me as I flicked the lights on and saw him hugging his body. Sure enough, Fisher was on my couch, wrapped in every blanket I owned. Why are you sitting here in the dark, you fucking weirdo?
I just got here and it's too fucking cold to move from here.
Are you serious right now? I could see my breath when I talked. You're never going to make it through basic if you can't handle a little cold. He waved his middle finger at me and snuggled farther into the couch.
How bad could it be? You made it through and Lawson's dumbass did too. Can't be that hard.
No matter where they put you for basic training, your ass will get smoked for jokes like that. I warned him. You can't just pop off at the mouth to anyone higher ranking than you, which would be me.
Right.
He said, laughing and saluting me. Fisher thought it was funny now, but I had no fucking idea if he would be able to handle it. Smoking soldiers was no joke, and neither was running up and down hills until your lungs felt like they would explode and until your sergeant finally told you that you could stop and barely being able to walk after. And basic training was just the start of it. Now that I'd been deployed, basic felt like a trip to the Bahamas in comparison. Not that I really knew what a vacation was like, but I watched enough TV to have an idea. Even if most of my impressions came from my ma watching the housewives of every fucking city go on countless vacations with what seemed like endless money to blow. I wanted to believe that Fisher would make it through and become a good soldier. Hell, even Lawson did. And I knew firsthand from basic how inept he could be. Fisher was tougher and more compassionate. From what I saw, he would actually Make a pretty good soldier if he stayed with the right crowd and could get a handle on his addictions, which was way easier said than done. Problem was, in the army, you had little control over your platoon, so the best you could hope for was just one person you could tolerate who wasn't a bad influence.
A little running won't kill me,
Fisher said, and his voice stretched with his body as he sprawled out all over my couch. Yeah, you say that now. You could barely make it through the physical. I eyed the